mastering the monotonous. You just figured out the boring details that work, and if you did them again and replicated them, they worked again. Instead of overcomplicating it and trying to look for something shiny, you just actually unpacked the systems and the processes and maybe the activity that worked and became really, really good at those things and just continue to do it over and over again. Welcome back to another episode of All or Nothing in Real Estate. I'm your host, Matt Smith, the founder of All or Nothing in Real Estate. This podcast is a movement to give back to this amazing industry that has given so much to me and my family. And I warned you guys the past couple episodes, I've got some big heavy hitter guests coming up. And today I have one of those guests. This guy needs no introduction, but I'm going to give him one anyway. He's been in the business about 30 years. He currently has 9 offices all throughout the Carolinas, about 430 agents, and they will do just a small number of around 4,000 closings this year. So without further ado, most of you probably know him. He is an operator at an elite level. And today we are joined by one of my friends, an amazing contributor to the industry, none other than Greg Harrelson. Welcome to the show.
Hey, thank you. Glad I've been anticipating at some point we were going to connect on one of these shows, whether Absolutely. You on mine or mine on yours. I'm glad this is happening, man. I'm excited about the conversation.
Yes, sir. Me too. I always learn something from you. There's no fluff in Greg, and he's executing at a very, very high level. He's an authentic human, and he is leading, I mean, one of the biggest companies in the nation. But he's still on the ground level at the same time. And so it's going to be a very interesting conversation, Greg. I look forward to diving in.
Yeah, let's do it.
So for the listeners, let's just start with just give a brief overview of who is Greg, where did you come from, and a little bit about your background and story.
Yeah. So, you know, Greg is this guy that didn't really excel too much in high school, kind of barely made it out, didn't graduate college, even though I went for like 5 years. Who then decided, you know, he needed to get serious at some point and went into real estate. And you know, for some reason, I don't know why, everything I didn't apply in academically in my younger years, for some reason, I applied it in real estate and I did it early on. And I really, when I got in, I dove in, I started learning it, you know, to the best of my ability, seeking some sort of mastery level. And then I just became a very consistent practitioner. You know, I followed systems. I repeated them, even though that they were so boring. I continued to do them over and over again until I reached a level of success. And then I look back and say, wow, that was not that difficult. And then I just kept repeating it. That's kind of who I am, you know. It's somebody that I said I'm an agent at heart because I love the game of selling real estate. I do think that that gives me an advantage in leadership and in building out, you know, teams and companies because I'm with everybody in the trenches and I'm leading by example. So, I mean, at any point that I'm telling you, hey, you need to do this, like you could look over 10 minutes later and see me doing it. So I'm not like reading a book saying, hey, maybe you ought to do what this guy said. Now I'm actually demonstrating it, you know, at a high level.
Yeah, that's I call that modeling and demonstrating as leaders, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot of, and I think with the industry is kind of evolving back, but I believe COVID, my opinion is that COVID created a lot of leaders that were just kind of in their ivory tower mm-hmm. leadership.
Yeah,
just because it was so easy, right? And there was a lot of transactions taking place, and it didn't require a level of leadership that it does in today's market. And I think what everyone is realizing is that, myself included, is that maybe I got too far from the trenches. Mm-hmm. And so I absolutely love that, and I love something else that you shared, and it's something that I share a lot on the show. I call it mastering the monotonous.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there's a lot to unpack in that. So that's something that caught my attention when you were sharing, is that you just figured out the boring details that work. And if you did them again and replicated them, they worked again. And so instead of overcomplicating it and trying to look for something shiny, you just actually unpacked the systems and the processes and maybe the activity that worked and became really, really good at those things and just continue to do it over and over again.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting that you pick that up because I think that is like it's part of the not so secret sauce. It's not a secret. We kind of know that. It's just taboo in the industry because, you know, one of the things that if anybody ever follows a Tony Robbins, you know, one of the things that he goes through is he talks about in Unleash the Power Within, he talks about some of the basic needs of humans, and one of those needs is variety. And so variety and seeking variety inside of your workplace is one of the reasons why we're always distracted and looking at shiny objects. It's an opportunity for us to fulfill that one basic need of variety. So what I've chosen to do is I said, you know what? I'm not going to get my variety fix in the way that I actually build my real estate operations. I'll get my variety fix in all the other areas of life. But that was one area that I said, I'm going to lack variety and I'm going to focus on mastering something that's predictable and duplicatable. And if we go back and we look at like Michael Jordan one day, you know, he was in a basketball game and he closed his eyes, shot a free throw, and made the free throw. Well, how did he do that? He did that by mastering repetitious boredom. How did Tiger Woods make those putts and make those shots? By mastering repetitious boredom. Those guys, and there's many people in arts and dance and in sports, musicians, they all of them, not one of them reach their level of mastery by not mastering repetitious boredom. So every legend that you know in any walk of life, that's exactly one of the critical parts of getting there. And I just wanted to go ahead and just copy what they did. All right. So if I'm going to be successful, they were successful by being bored. I guess I need to embrace boredom. Let's go.
I love it. I love it. And instead of like, and I think that like life happens to all of us, right? And I think that hard things happen. And I believe some people think that sacrifice is optional, right? But I believe that sacrifice is required in life. We either sacrifice for the things that we want in life, or the things that we want in life become the sacrifice. So
Oh,
I
yes.
choose to sacrifice so that I can get the things that I want instead of sacrificing the things that I want by my choices.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I can go through the pain of how often that, like for me, a lot of people would know, you know, well, Greg's going to tell you, you got to make a lot of prospecting calls, right? And that's painful for a lot of people, right? And so yes, I can choose that pain, or I can choose my financial position by not actually generating, and then I can experience the financial pain later on. So it really comes to you, you're using sacrifice, right? I'm just saying, choose your pain.
You choose your pain, choose your sacrifice, choose your
Yeah.
hard, right? Whatever word
Yeah,
you want
same
to put
thing.
in there, it's the same message. Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you hit on something too, distractions.
Yes.
I think that a lot of agents struggle with this. So I'm a coach for some of the top team leaders in the nation. I'm in a lot of rooms with a lot of elite individuals similar to Greg. And I'm a student. I'm a lifelong learner. And what I've
Yes.
realized is that a lot of times when we use the word distractions, what we are really saying without saying it is we are trying to find a way to avoid the work that is required. And so I replace that. Anytime I hear the word distractions, I instantly, my brain says, that's work avoidance. Why am I avoiding this thing? And I think if we were just honest with ourselves, like we know, I actually have a speech prepared for my sales meeting right after this podcast. Guess what I'm talking about? Execution on the things, the fundamentals that matter, right? It's
Yeah.
crazy, right? It's crazy how that works, but it's just people need reminded on these things. And I think we look at like shiny objects as an example that you mentioned. I think shiny object syndrome is real, but I also think it's just a way to avoid the work. And I think if most people were honest, it is very, very, very rare. It's like winning the lottery if the shiny object actually works. What are the
Oh,
odds
yeah.
you actually win the lottery? Right. And so why are we playing the lottery, or do we want to play a game that we know the rules and we know if we do this, we get the result we desire? And I think we're just playing the wrong game a lot of times. And the shiny object that I coach people to look at is there is a shiny object that will get you everything you want in real estate. There really is. It's called the mirror. The man or woman in the mirror is the one who can get it done. And I believe the human superpower that we all have is our willingness to accept extreme personal responsibility for everything in our life. And the
Yeah.
minute we accept it, is the minute we can change it.
Yeah, that's awesome. You know, one thing that when you said distraction, Okay, when you brought that up just a moment ago, here's where my mind went. When I'm fly fishing, I love to fly fish. Okay. When I'm fly fishing, I was actually fishing the other day, and I'm skipping, but it's the same thing, same story that I'm going to tell here. And as I was fishing, I had three friends tell me who I was fishing with to call my wife. Because my wife could not get me on the phone. So she knew who I was fishing with. So she texted all of them, and all of them picked up the phone. Hey, man, your wife called. Sarah's telling you, you need to call Sarah. My point being this, I am passionate about fly fishing. And when I fly fish, nothing distracts me. I forgot I even had a phone. I wasn't thinking about not picking up my phone. It never even occurred to me that there was a phone because there's my passion. If I'm playing tennis, I don't like play tennis and then after every game go and check my phone. I don't go and check my emails. Why? Because that's a game I'm playing that I'm passionate about. The whole point is, what about making real estate your game that you're passionate about? Because see, we don't allow distractions while we're engaging in a passion. So I've just kind of like real estate is my game. I grind just like I'm grinding fishing and I'm grinding playing tennis or any other sport. And I'm grinding and I'm not distracted because it's my passion. And that's one of the ways that I've over time I've developed that passion for the game of real estate. And so I can resist, or I actually don't see a lot of the same distractions that people talk about having all the time. They don't even exist. Well, you mean people don't call you? Oh, I'm sure they call me. I'm sure they do. But I haven't, my ringer does, there's no ringer and no buzz and no vibration on my phones. Not gonna happen.
Man, that's so funny. Success leaves clues, right? I didn't know that about you. I've had my phone on silent for the last 7 years of my life because I believe in playing offense, not defense. And it doesn't mean that whoever is calling is not important, but I have a priority in the moment, and I'm not going to do that person a disservice by distracting myself away from that I already committed to. Right. And I think too many times we just live in this noisy, noisy, noisy world. And I think one of the things that we struggle with is we struggle to focus. We struggle to remove distractions and just really have tunnel vision and focus on what's in front of us. One of the things that I work on really, really hard is that I'm a proud girl dad. I've got two little girls at home. And so I work a lot and I work really, really hard and I travel a lot. But I'm also, when I'm with my kids, I am with my kids. I'm present. Right. And so, like, I have learned that if I'm at work and I'm spending time away from my kids, I'm not at work just to be here. I'm at work to get shit done. I'm sacrificing time away from the most important people in my life. I'm gonna make the most out of the time that I have. And I think too many people just are lackadaisical with their time, right? They just.
I'll take it one step further. Not only is my phone make no noises or movements, I haven't checked a voicemail in probably 7 years. I haven't checked a voicemail because usually the result of a voicemail is you're going to either respond or you're going to react. And probably 80% of the voicemails create a reaction, don't really create a response. So I've got a staff member that checks my phone about every hour. She will call my phone. I never see her calling. She calls, she checks my voicemail, and I probably only have to respond to about 10% of the things that are left on my voicemail. So I haven't, no, I wouldn't even know how to correct to check my voicemail. I don't check a voicemail. I mean, when she goes out of town, she's getting ready to go out of town for 10 days. And one of the panicking is like, who's going to check my voicemail? Maybe nobody,
Yeah.
but it ain't going to be me.
I love it. I love it. I
Now
want to.
people are trained. They don't leave me voicemails anymore.
Sure.
Yeah,
Yeah, I'm similar
they
with
call
emails.
Stacy.
I'm similar with emails, right? If it's important, it'll be somewhere other than an email in my life. People just have to train them over time, right?
There you go.
Because I think email is a huge distraction. I want to move to, I know that you, in your heart, Greg, you want to help people. And I think one of the things that I've realized having a pulse on the industry right now is that there are several agents that are struggling, right? The market changes and they struggle to adapt. So, do you have any advice that maybe would be helpful to an agent or a team leader that is struggling right now with the challenges in their marketplace?
Do I have any yes. Do I have any advice for teams, team leader? Yes. Go and do the things that you know you should be doing that you're continuing to avoid. Which, you know, it all comes down to, no one would be surprised if they hear me say, you just got to talk to more people and you got to do it consistently. And you've got the leaders need to step back in. You know, you talked about COVID and how people started leading from the top. Well, you know, I'm not sure exactly how long you've been in business, but I mean, this has happened. This has happened historically multiple different times. And I just remember years well before the pandemic, where everyone was talking about, you know, what, man, you need to be the CEO. I'm going to go ahead and be the CEO of my team. And I'm like, CEO? Yeah, I'm going to be the CEO, or I'm going to hire a CEO. I'm stepping out of production. And I'm like, you know what? As all that was listening, I was listening and all that, I'm like, I'm never going to be the CEO. That's a hired position. It's a management position in my mind. Okay. And so I think a lot of the people that are struggling are still stuck in the identity of they are a leader, and they assess and they define leadership as being the top of the food chain. No, the leader should be defined by being at the bottom of the food chain, in my opinion. That's a powerful way to lead. And so the challenge is people have boxed themselves into an identity of being something, and they're having a hard time with being seen differently. And I just say, look, I know you have to be vulnerable to be seen back at, you know, in the trenches again, but you will be admired more than you know if you do that.
100%.
Stop being committed to an identity that's not working for you.
So good.
That's the conversation I'd have.
I'm gonna hit on leadership, and then I want to pivot to maybe an agent that's listening that's struggling. So that's team leader perspective,
Yeah,
right?
I'd be more team leader, correct. Yes.
And so, but I it's spot on, right? Spot on. I see leaders that, and I think, and I'm not saying this in a negative context, right? But I think our ego controls more than we realize in life. And I
Yeah.
think our ego gets in the way of decisions we know we need to make, and we don't make it because we're afraid of what the perception of others may be. And what I've learned, and it's by being around amazing mentors in my life, like John Chepleck,
Yeah.
is that there's three great traits of every single leader, and they're not what most people think: humility, vulnerability, and transparency. That's what it takes to be a great leader. You have to be humble, you have to be willing to share and be vulnerable with your team, and you have to be transparent. The leaders that say that sit back in the CEO position and say, "Well, do as I say, not as I do," how does that work for you? It doesn't. The problem is, and this is a conversation I have with leaders. So if you're a leader, listen, like I have this, these are coaching conversations I have with high performing team leaders, just transparency, is that the problem is you. The minute you say, "I wish my agents would fill in the blank," you are now blaming someone else for your lack of results on your team, and you have given away all of your power. There's nothing you can do to change it. And so now you're just in this weird cycle of you're blaming others, you're playing the victim, and you're probably going to create resentment between you and your team. It's not intentional, but that's what you're doing.
Yeah.
Versus saying, "You know what? My team is, hey, we need to increase activity. You know what Greg does? You know what I do whenever we see a lull in activity in our team? We get in the trenches. I got a headset right here. And I call right alongside them and encourage and help and coach and show them the way." I believe if you listen to this show, you've heard me say this before, but it's worth being reminded. There's only one way to lead, in my opinion, and that is servant leadership by example. We've heard of servant leadership, we've heard of lead by example. I have combined the two. I think it takes both. One of my principles as a leader is I will never ask anyone to do that I haven't anyone to do anything that I haven't done myself or I'm not doing right alongside them. Like that's what it takes to be a leader. It truly is. And I think we have this weird false perception in this industry of like the seventh level, and I'm just going to sit back and I'm going to tell people what to do and collect all the money. I don't think that's reality. How many people are actually doing that successfully, sustainably over a period of time? It's very, very, very rare. And I think it's very unrealistic to try to obtain.
Yeah, I agree. Do nothing and nothing will occur. You know, it really comes down to that. And I really think it has a lot to do with identity. I really do. Cause I, you know, these leaders will reach out to me and Grace like, hey, man, my agents will do anything and they're not doing this. And I'm like, all right, okay. So who are you being that is so unmotivating to them right now? And like, that's the hardest question. Like, who are you being to either attract a bunch of unmotivated individuals or who are you being to demotivate all these individuals?
Yeah, really
And
good.
that's how we need to be looking at it. It's like we immediately, you said looking in the mirror, right? And no matter whatever is going on is a product of who you're being.
So good.
So that's the answers are right there for all of us as leaders. It just requires us to make the change.
Absolutely. I love it. So let's move on to if there's an agent right now that is struggling. I know that you have a lot of high performing agents and you coach your agents at a very high level. If there's an agent listening right now that is kind of struggling in their current conditions, what advice would you give them?
Man, triple the number of contacts you're making. You know, if I'm playing basketball and somebody's in a slump, what do we tell them?
Yeah, shoot your way out of it.
Shoot your way out of the slump. Swing your way out of the slump. That's it. I mean, I don't even know what else we can tell them. That's not BS. Like, so I have to make a decision as a leader, as a coach. And I can be entertaining or I can be effective. As a coach, if I want to be entertaining, in order to entertain and get people to pay you a long time, you constantly tell them all this new stuff. But to be effective, but it's harder to get people to stick with you. To be effective, you repeat very few things, but you repeat them over and over and over again. So I believe that if I tell an agent anything that if they're struggling, if they're in a slump, and if I tell them anything but shoot your way out of the slump, I think that I'm lying to them. So, you know, people are going to say, well, of course he's going to say that. Of course I'm going to tell the truth. Of course I'm going to say that. But if we remove the attachment to our industry and we look at it as a sport, and I was in a slump, you would say, shoot your way out of slump. Just keep shooting, keep shooting. Take more shots. Keep swinging, keep swinging, keep swinging. More at bats. That's exactly what you would coach. We know the answers. Why do we not coach what we know? And why do we tell people things that we know are not necessarily the way? Because you want to be entertained. I mean, you want to, no, you not want to be entertained because most leaders want to be entertaining.
Yes.
It's easier to get an audience if you're entertaining. My audience, by the way, is much smaller than a lot of people's audience out there because my message is so like refined and it's the same. But there's people out there that have done way less. And they've got a much bigger audience because they're so much better than me at entertaining. And I think both of us need to coexist in the industry. I think that there's value in there. I'm just not the entertainer. I'm just about being effective. That's what I would tell them.
And it's so good because I think another, so you mentioned like the entertainer and I wrote that down, right? Am I being entertaining or am I being effective? I think that's great advice for us to ask ourselves as leaders, as coaches. And I also think that some people struggle with knowing you started off this way. You didn't say it this way, but what I heard you say was you're proven. Meaning that you're not teaching from a book. You're not teaching from, well, someone told me that this would work. Maybe we should try it. It is like, I did this 5 minutes ago and it worked for me and it will for you. So go do this. There's a big difference. And that's one of the things I pride myself on as a coach too, is proven, not theory. And I could have a lot more coaching clients if I was a better entertainer. I really could.
All day long. All
But
day long. Easily.
I believe I live in truth, right? And what if the truth hurts your feelings? Like I just not attached to that. It's the truth is the truth. And I think so many people, if you're being entertained, it's either because I don't believe that leader sometimes either they maybe sometimes they don't understand. Sometimes they just want to be popular, right? And then also I think maybe it's not a coach or a team leader, but there's a lot of this in our industry. If they're really, really entertaining and it sounds too good to be true, it probably is, and they're probably trying to sell you something.
Yeah,
Well,
no
we can
doubt.
market our way out of a slump, Greg. No, bullshit. You cannot. You can't.
No, you can't market your way out of a slump. You can't spend your way out of a slump. You just have to grind your way out of a slump.
So many people, when the market shifted, you sparked something. Their answer was, "Well, I now have money from the
Yes.
market, and so let me just throw money to shut this problem up.
Yeah.
My money will make the problem disappear." That is not sustainable.
Yeah.
I think that is another way of us avoiding being the leader that is needed. And I think it just if we get around the avoidance, we just go straight to the issue. It's you have way better results. And I want to share that, like, there's a lot of ahas I'm having from this, but just for the audience, like, Greg is not some new kid here that's like, "Hey, I think this might work." I gave you stats, right? Like 4,000 homes sold this year, and he's giving you the advice that actually works. And so, really, really good. I wanna kind of highlight something that you said in leadership, and I say this a lot too. Instead of being the CEO, I think what great late leaders are is the CRO, the Chief Repeating Officer.
That's good. That's good. I've never heard that one.
Sometimes we don't need to learn more. We need to be reminded more. And there's only this much stuff that really works really well. And if you go outside of that, again, it's avoidance. Like I want to live here. And if we can just be accountable to that, now we can elevate and we can grow. You mentioned identity too. And one of my mentors is Ed Mylett. And he has a really, really great speech on around identity. And it really, I shared it with my team, and it really, I've done a whole podcast on it. You can go back and find it in a previous episode. But I really broke it down. I tied it to real estate, and it worked so well that my agents over the next 3 months like skyrocketed because I really challenged them not only to make more calls and have this thing and learn this script. It was, who are you in here? And I think what happens is we have this internal thermostat is how he explains identity. And so if we identify as someone that runs at 70 degrees as a thermostat on the wall, and we start cooling down and it starts getting cold and I don't have enough money to pay my bills. What do we do as humans? We turn the temperature up in a heartbeat and we figure it out. But what also happens if we identify as a 70 degree performer? And we start performing 80, 90, 95 degrees, what happens? We also have that same reaction in the opposite way. And we subconsciously cool ourselves off because we're uncomfortable and we haven't done the inner work to identify as someone who can consistently perform at this level. And so we cool ourselves back down. So the
Complacency
minute,
might start kicking in.
yeah, absolutely. The minute you can work on your identity and say, like I repeat this mantra all the time is my accomplishment is my new standard, right? Once I've accomplished it once, I've proven to myself I can. Why, if I can do it today, why can't I do it tomorrow? And if you just live life through that, you can constantly grow your identity, which will help you consistently get better results and more consistent results over a long period of time.
Yeah, love it, love it. I was thinking about when you're putting a lot of time into that word identity, and I just wrote down on my list. It's like, one of the things that I identify myself as, people can identify us differently as we identify ourselves as, right? But somebody that I identify myself as is somebody that's developing talent. Somebody says, Greg, what do? I develop talent. That's what I do. So versus an identity of getting a certain level. Okay, like I want to build this identity of being a 100 deal producer. I mean, that's fine. Okay. But then you got real issues of like, well, when you get to 100, you have a hard time getting to 200 because you identify as 100, or you
Sure.
get panic if you're 70, right? There's just like throttling up and throttling down. But there is no end to how I identify myself. In other words, developing talent is never ending.
Yes.
Helping others is never ending. And so I think it's very important when we start thinking about and rethinking about what is that identity? What identity do fits me? It to me, what I did is focused on the having an identity that is associated to others
Yes, sir.
versus personal achievement.
So good. Man, it's so crazy. Because you and I haven't really spoke much, but we're so similar. We think very similarly. And one of the
No,
things that,
I knew that when I saw you at a Cheplik event, you were talking. And
yeah.
I think I said to you, maybe I tapped you on the shoulder. I don't think I'd ever seen you talk. I knew your name, just in different circles. And I said, we need to like connect,
Yeah.
because I think there was something there. I could tell that, that I don't know if it's who we've listened to, who we've been mentored by. We do share John Cheplik, but it probably goes even further beyond that,
Yeah.
but I agree. I'm glad we got to connect finally.
For sure. And one of the things that you just shared there that reminds me of is I've and again, it's a speech because I develop people too, right? I'm like, I never identified myself as that, but when you said that, I'm like, yeah, I do that every day. Like, I believe one of my responsibilities is to like give every piece of knowledge that I have away to others, right? Which is one of the purposes of this podcast is like I want to be a vessel. I don't want to be someone that hoards information. I want to be a pass-through, right? And I think one of the things it reminds me of is I learned this from Jerick Robbins. I was at an event. So he's Tony Robbins' son, and he shared a little bit around your first mountain versus your second mountain in life. And so if you climb in your first mountain, for me, my first mountain was number one, how do I not be 3 months behind on my electric bill? Right? Like that was my first step. And then it kept progressing from there. And it progressed to, I thought, well, maybe one day I could make, I don't know, maybe I can make $100,000 a year. That like I when I get there, I would have made it, right? Like that was just I remember that part of my life. And what I realized is that once I got there, in real estate, by the way, it happened in my first year. I remember my first year. So for those of you that need hope, if you follow what Greg is sharing here, because that was my philosophy too. I'm not going home without an appointment, period. That was my business plan. And I paid more money in taxes my first full year in real estate than I'd ever made in my life. And so once I got there, then I struggled with what do I do now? And that's where I had to really continue my personal development journey. And I had to continue figuring out what is next for me and why is that important. And one of the things that I realized is that I started when I really, because I had sticking points, and I think we all do. Success is not a straight line. And one of my several different layers and ceilings of sticking points were like, I just got comfortable and I got complacent. I'm like, I never thought I would be here. Now that I'm here, do I still want to work as hard as I do? Like, do I still want to do that? And what the inner work that I had to do was, I'm not doing this for me anymore. I had to find something bigger than myself that I was serving because I'd already fulfilled all the needs and surpassed everything that I thought I would ever have. And I'm not saying that I'm like, I've made it, but I come from like, I was making $30,000 a year before I got in real estate, right? And so, like, when you start making $100,000 a year and you triple your income, like, this life's pretty good, right? And so, what I had to do is realize that I started living for my second mountain. And it wasn't until I heard Jarek say this that I realized that I had went on this journey multiple times. But that second mountain is when you get to the top of your first mountain, what you realize if you look around is you can look back and say, wow, look how far I've climbed. I'm really proud of myself, which you should. But you also realize there's another mountain over here and it's way taller. And there's other people that you can help climb their mountain. And when you start living for helping other people, and you start living the second mountain life of how can I help other people achieve their goals, it is way more fulfilling. And there is no amount of money that can replace that. Me and my good friend Dustin Runyon, when we have conversations around it, we call it better than money. It is better than money. And I think that, like, as an example, my goals, Greg, just so you understand, my goals for this year, I have zero financial goals for myself. I have financial goals for my coaching clients. I have financial goals for my agents. I want them to achieve. And if I believe if they achieve, then I will get what I'm owed or deserve or whatever, however you want to word it. But I'm focused on how can I help them accomplish. And when I made that transition in my life, like it's just crazy how exponentially things grew.
Yeah, I agree. Same. I actually don't even have financial goals for any of my agents. We don't talk about the business plan is not revolved around a financial a dollar number. It's how many families served.
Yes.
So I always focus on transactions because a transaction is a family served, a client served. So we can reverse engineer to the financials. If
Sure.
somebody does have a goal of making 200 or 500,000, then I just reverse engineer how many families you got to serve. And then the entire conversation and in blueprint is based on that number of transactions. So
Yeah,
I'm right
really, really
along
good.
with you.
Yeah, really good. And ours too, right? That's a language that we use. And we also have another thing, and it was a CHEPLAC thing to go to the board, is I know their number of families served that will get them the outcome of the
That's
financial
right.
that they
Yeah,
deserve,
yeah.
right?
The financials exist, right? I mean,
Yes.
they exist. They're just not the focal point.
Absolutely. And then I also know, and this is something for leaders too to listen, and Greg, I would be willing to bet you have this too, is that I also know that what that agent will accomplish in their personal life as a result of these families served. They
Yep.
want the vacation for their family. They want the new car, whatever. They want to pay off debt, whatever those things are. And so we can tie it to more than just, it's not just a number that they will make in their bank account. It's a family served, but it's not just a family served. It's also what will be as a result of you serving those families in your life. And I think when you connect emotionally with people, it really helps impact their identity, as we've been discussing.
Yeah, I agree totally.
Cool. We talked about if someone's struggling. I'm curious where your brain goes here. This is one of my favorite questions. I think it's really easy. A lot of humans have fight or flight, right? When your back's against the wall, you're struggling, most humans choose to fight, right? We will figure it out. But I think true success is judged by how you show up after you win. After you just won the championship, after you just had the biggest closing of your career, after you just hit your goal for the year, how do you show up the next day? And so, if someone's winning right now, what advice would you give them to continue winning and to find either that second mountain, their identity? How do they keep that up if they're winning right now? Because I believe if they're winning, they're probably more vulnerable than they realize.
Yeah, well, boy, that's an interesting statement right there. If they're winning, they're probably more vulnerable than otherwise. I mean, I love that. That's very good. You know, one of the things, and this is just something that I believed in, for years, and I've definitely coached for years, is that, we start every day at zero. And we start every day at zero. That's by default. You wake up with zero, especially in our business, right? We generate an appointment. We make a sale, we generate an appointment that's future business, okay? Then we make a sale that's a future closing, right? And so every day, if every day you go and you don't make a sale, then there'll be a future day that you will not have a closing every day. So basically every day you start at zero. And it's by default. Let's not complain, let's embrace it. We wake up at zero, okay? But how we end is by design. How we end the day is by design. So by default, we start off at zero, but how you end is by design. So if you end at zero for the day, that was by design. It had an impact on what you did throughout that day. So I just constantly say, like, look, we're looking, winning is winning today. Winning is not, it's not about like, because I did this, I'm winning. No, you won today. And
Yes.
tomorrow, you start at zero. And every day we start at zero. The question is going to be, how many days in a row can you end at zero before you go out of business?
Wow. Dude, that's deep. That's really good. That is really, really good. I've
Yeah.
heard the start at zero before.
Yeah.
I've never heard it said in that way. And I love how you flip that. And instead of saying like, what do you need to do to not end at zero? The opposite of that is how many zeros can you take before you go to business?
That's right. And that's when you said a moment ago, like when people are feeling winnings, when they're most vulnerable is when they're feeling that when they're really feeling successful and winning, they're probably taking their foot off the gas
Yes,
and they
sir.
don't even see that they got 0 days compounding. And we know you lose that momentum, right?
Yes.
And so how do we lose the momentum? We lose the momentum by having consecutive days of zeros. when we end at zero. We always start at zero, right? But we end consecutive days in a row at zero. Then we lose all the momentum. Now we're losing. So how about if we just start every day at zero and make sure that we end above zero, then we don't have to be on this roller coaster ride.
Yep.
But you got to do it on a daily basis. Don't, it's not, let's not measure it, over long periods of times. There's other reasons why we would measure longer period of times, but in the context of this conversation, we've got to stay focused on starting at zero, but not ending at zero.
So good. Well, I think too many people like it, and this is something I share a lot, and it's win the day, right? And I have a
Yeah,
process
in
to
the
win the
day.
day. And if you do this, you win the day. One of our SOPs is our MSREG win the day process. You do this, you won the day, right? But so many people focus on how do I win the year? Well, what I tell them is you can't win the year if you don't win enough months. You can't win the month if you don't win enough weeks. You can't win the week if you don't win enough days. So it matter well, all that matters. All that matters is what you do today.
I use sports a lot. So any sport, like I'll see people like Steph Curry might come out, right? And he shoots lights out, like 80% from the 3-point line in the first quarter. And I can tell you right now, this will be classic Greg Harrelson. I would bet anybody he does not end with an 80% percentage by the end of the game.
Absolutely.
There's going to be a quarter he's going to shoot the lights out. There's going to be a quarter that he shoots his average. There's going to be a quarter that he shoots well below average. And at the end of the game, he's probably going to be somewhere close to his running average. So the end of the year, the way that we win the year is that we make sure that our average for that game for each quarter is a little bit better. A little bit better. Or not, we don't, sometimes we don't have to be a little better each quarter or each day. What we have to do is not be as bad. So it's not, it's like, there's higher highs, but what's more important than higher highs is having higher lows.
Yes.
Because if we can raise our low up where our low is not quite as low, we're going to have higher highs, but it's really focusing on having higher lows on average. Like, don't get bageled. That's great. You get three appointments today, but like, let's no days with zero. And that no days with zero over the year is going to be the reason, or less days with zero is going to be why there's going to be growth in the numbers over the year.
Yes. Everybody can win on the day they're feeling good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Everybody can. I
Sure.
think success is determined by how do you show up on the days you don't feel like it.
Yeah.
And so another way of saying that is a lot of people talk about goals and they have these big goals. And I think you should dream big, right? I want you to stretch your thinking of what's possible, raise your ceiling of what's possible, go for it. But if you don't raise your floor along with it, you'll never achieve it. And the floor in my mind is your standards. So, what is your daily minimum standard of activity required? And never fall below it. Doesn't mean that you can't double it one day or triple it one day or have a high, but no matter what, I'm not falling below this. And if we put that in place, our life will be forever better. One of the quotes you reminded me of, so I'm a quotes guy. That's how I learn and I remember quotes because I think they can tell stories and relate. That Steph Curry story, by the way, I'm going to be stealing that. That was so good. But one of the things that I think relates here is that I think a lot of people, where they get stuck, is a lot of us stop doing what works because it worked. We stop doing what works because it works. So we start prospecting. We set appointments. We meet appointments. We get under contract. We have three pendings on the board. Is our prospecting increased or decreased at that point for most agents?
Most people will decrease.
They do less because they got a little taste of victory. But what would happen if they just stayed consistent with that? That three would turn to six. That six would turn to nine. And that's just where I call that the death cycle of salespeople. We just get in our own way.
I speak on this a lot within my operations, and I'm a real big believer, even though a lot of people don't like to admit it at first glance. So the audience out there, please take this and ponder this with yourself for don't react to what I'm going to say. Ponder it for a week. And that is, I actually believe that the fear of success is way more prevalent than the fear of failure. And so, yes, we get there and we have this breakthrough and we start setting these three appointments or we start doing this. But what ends up kicking in, like, why do we pull back? Because we got afraid of success. And some people, it's hard for that to sit with people, but you got to understand, like, with success comes loneliness. Let me explain.
Yes.
It's like every time you break through and reach another level, there are certain people that exist in your life that you're no longer going to be friends with. They're no longer going to love you because you're not who you were. So, like, if you're used to making $100,000 and you're used to going to the clubs and you're used to doing all this, and then all of a sudden you step up your game and now you're making $500,000, and you're like, you know what? I've decided I'm not going to drink anymore. Now all of it, now you what you did is you lost commonality amongst your peer group, and you're going to stop calling them. Because you're not really interested in doing what they're doing. Not that they're bad, you just lost interest. And they're gonna stop calling you because they're gonna get tired of calling you and saying, no, I'm not interested. I gotta get up in the morning. So they're gonna stop hearing, they're gonna stop calling you and getting rejected by you. You're gonna be rejecting them. And then you're gonna find yourself alone,
Yes.
finding, like, looking for a new peer group. So you don't go from one box. You know, the problem is people think they go from one box to another box. No, there's actually a space in between. There's a box, then there's a space, and then there's another box. I'm doing 10 deals and I want to do 50 deals. Well, before you get to the 50 deal box, you got to go to that little box that no one knows it's in between, and it's a lonely, dark, empty space. And when everybody grows and they get into that lonely spot, it's easier to retreat and go backwards than it is
Yes.
to fight through the loneliness and then figure out your new group later. And I think that that's a real big challenge, and people aren't talking about this enough, is that's why people retreat. They're afraid of success.
Dude, so good. I totally 1000% agree. Every time that I've shared this with anyone, they debate it and they don't agree, but I've seen it, man. I've seen it
Yeah.
over and over and over and over again. And I think that's the product of being in and around high performance environments is that we've seen people outgrow their own identity. And I've even done that and retreated before and then went again and retreated
Sure.
again. Went before. I'm like, wait a minute, this looks familiar. I know it's dark and scary, but if I just take one more step, what does that look like? And like
Yeah.
it, you know, sometimes you got to be in there in that lonely chapter for a couple times because it's real.
You know,
I
I think,
remember, but
and you're going to do it again. I do it. I still do it now. Like, I'm not going to do it in the area of, like, how many listens I can get this month. Because in my mind, I mean, I can get as many listens as I choose this month. But you know, where I do it is in, I would say right now I'm not feeling it, but I would say in the last 2 years, if somebody asked me, Greg, where have you felt like retreating? It was in the acquisition of companies. It was in, so once I went from, like, you know, really looking at acquisitions and acquiring and, like, you know, quantum leaps in growth, you know, was I good enough? Or, you know, I mean, my identity for years has been I'm an agent's agent. I've been a top producing agent for so many years and build year, you know, build. And then acquisition now takes me into a whole new environment, which is operator environment, company
sure.
owner environment. And I'm an agent agent. I like the people who operate, but I don't believe in most of the philosophies of most operators. I think they should just tell these people the truth. Stop running these companies, lying to them that they got hope by doing these things that are not going to work. Tell them the damn truth. Why won't they tell them the truth? Because they never walk the walk, so they can't talk the talk. They've never walked it. So I've always been in conflict with other leaders because I've walked it. So I have no problem saying it and being firm on it. So I've always had a, like, almost a little disconnect with owners over the years. So then as I start saying, okay, I'm going to acquire to accelerate growth, I'm going to acquire. And then that's when I started acquiring, and I'm like, uh-oh, this is lonely. I want to run back to my friends in real estate sales because I don't know if I'm good enough. I don't know what I don't know. I don't know if I'm smart enough to be this. There's 100%. That's exactly where it's happened to me in my most recent years. And it's going to happen again. I don't know exactly where it's going to be, but one thing you can bet your bottom dollar on is I'm inviting it to happen because I
Yes.
will learn from it and I'll grow from it.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. Man, so good. I want to end on this, and respect your time. What is Greg Harrelson's superpower?
The ability to get people to believe that they can do more than they thought they could ever do, but actually get them to execute on it.
That's a superpower if you ask me.
Yeah.
Getting them.
I think I'm effective. First, I got to get you to believe before you're going to see. And then I got to get you to execute on that belief. And I believe I'm really good at that.
How do you get, if someone's listening right now, how do you get them to believe? I know it's kind of like a blanket statement and probably hard, but how would you get people? I want to leave them with some belief. How do we get them to believe in themselves?
Yeah, good question. So I would, depending on the personality type, this is where it gets a little difficult, right? Because you got the see it, then I'll believe it. Classic Wayne Dyer book, right? Or when you believe it, then you'll see it. And so I'm kind of like adopting the philosophy of that. And so what I usually talk with somebody when I'm having in the beginning stages of these conversations, I'm having them visualize exactly what it is that they want. Okay. And then I want them to explain to me all the reasons why they can't have it.
So good.
And what'll happen is I don't even really, I'm not really, I care, but I'm not really caring much of what they say. I just want them to hear what they say. And then as they're hearing them answer that question, the next step would be, now tell me out of the four things that you wrote down, reasons why you can't have it, which one of those are really true and which one of those are fear?
So good.
And so they will say, well, this one, this is the truth. No, I really feel this way. Okay, well, there's another person over here that's experienced the same thing, but they're feeling different. So if one person can experience the same thing but feel this way, and then you feel this way, then it's not a truth. It the truth, then both people would universally have to feel the same way. So there can't be a truth. Okay, so I'm just looking for which ones are true that you've said. Tell me which ones are true. And here's the truth. There is no truth in any of them.
Yeah.
And it that's I start there. It's a process, but that's kind of where I go.
Man, that's so
Got to
good
make sure
advice.
that they understand that it's all bullshit.
Yeah. It's just excuses that we feed
Yeah.
ourselves because fear
Yeah.
holds us back, right?
And
Maybe.
maybe our parents programmed us and
Absolutely.
not purposefully, right?
Yeah.
Maybe we interpreted something that our
Sure.
parents were doing and then became our truth, but the reality is we were just kids when we formed that opinion. It wasn't really a truth.
And I think we all face that in real estate, right? Like it's that I had four new agents on board yesterday, and I asked them, I said, how many of you had people in your family that doubted this was a smart move for you? And everyone raised their hand quickly. Like, yep.
Yeah,
I'm like,
of course.
why is it? Well, there's no predictability. It's not sustainable. It's like, I'm like, okay, well,
Not a real profession.
yeah. And so I went through a very similar exercise to what you did. Something that you reminded me of is that one of the phrases that I use is that your truth or is that the truth? Because there's
Yes,
a
that's
difference.
right. That's right. That's key.
Yep. And very good. Very good. Cool. Well, Greg, man, thank you so much for taking your time.
Yeah.
Dude, this was a killer episode. I'm going to go back and re-listen. I've got like 4 pages of notes while I'm sitting here talking to you. So thank you so much for taking your time. If someone wants to connect with you, reach out to you, what's the best way for them to follow Greg, learn more from the brilliance of Greg Harrelson?
You know, I post a lot of content on a Facebook page that I have called Real Estate Sales Solutions. So check it out, Real Estate Sales Solutions. I'm always posting stuff on there, my thoughts, coaching thoughts and whatnot. And then, the simplest way is just hit the message button and DM me on through Facebook. That's pretty
Awesome.
much the easiest way.
Awesome. Well, Greg, thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it. Guys, thank you so much for listening. As always, I know this one, you got value. I just ask one simple thing. If you know someone in your life that will get value from this episode and all of the nuggets that Greg shared, just share this episode with them. Let's make an impact in people's lives and make a difference in this industry. Thanks so much, Greg.
All right, man. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.